Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every.Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Our foundation scripture comes from Mark chapter 11, verse 24. Therefore, I say unto you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. The Storytelling Time podcast this week is the first story taken from the fourth chapter of the book, Miracles in the Lives of Ordinary People, entitled, Healing with a Purpose. The title of the podcast today is, Where Football is King. Before we start our story, I want to say that we're continuing to promote the writing efforts of those accepting the challenge of writing a book by June of this year. In the next several weeks, I'll be bringing you advice on how to meet the challenge that was put forward, the challenge of writing a book. At this point, let me just say that in my mind, being an author is an attitude, not just the manifestation of a finished product. So you don't have to write, let me put it this way. You don't have to complete a book to call yourself an author. You only have to be in the process of thinking about what you're going to write. Take note of what I just said. That is, in my mind, you need only to think about what you intend to write. But the most important thing is that you have to think about what you're going to write and believe that at some point your efforts and thought will manifest itself by you having a completed copy of a book. The key here is that these thoughts have to permeate through your mind. No one else can do it for you. So, as I said, in my mind, you are an author if you mentally are in the process of developing your book. But the idea is that you develop your own thoughts about what you intend to write. That is, the plots, the characters, the circumstances, and the physical setting where the story is to take place. These are critical aspects of fictional novels, or in the case of a non-fictional work, you need an outline of ideas that you will put forward. Again, all this happens in your own mind. This is before you ever place what you've thought about on paper. So, be confident and hopeful that what you're thinking about will eventually come to pass in the form of a book. That's what it says in our foundation scripture in Mark 11:24. This verse of scripture tells us that whatever things you pray for, that is, whatever you desire, believe that you have already received them, and then you will get them. Notice, you have to believe that you've already received, past tense, those things that you want. Likewise, you have to believe that you've already written your book. Yeah, you have to believe that you already have it. Written your book, that is, in your own mind. And if you really believe that, the physical manifestation of what you're believing will follow. So, if you have a desire to write a book, believe that you've already completed it in your own mind, and you will have it. That is to say, it will be manifested at some point in the future. The common way of thinking about it is that you will have it, have what you believe, when it appears to you physically. But what I'm talking about is a more radical approach, and that is, you're most likely to get it when you first have it already in your spirit. Scripturally speaking, you have it by faith. Let me give you a practical example of what I'm talking about. As a little boy, I always dreamed of becoming a teacher. I envisioned, in my mind, standing in front of a class with a necktie on and a white shirt, teaching a group of students. Now, keep in mind that I'm a product of the 1950s and the 1960s, when male teachers were neatly dressed in slacks, a white shirt, and necktie. Yes, it was a little different back then than what it is today. In effect, those teachers were my role models who propelled me to pursue this goal, as manifested in the vision that I had. And after many years of academic preparation, I did become a teacher as an adult. You know, I've adopted the slogan, just believe and you will receive. Let me add to that slogan something that's very important. And that is, once you do believe that you will get what you desire, you have to act on that belief to assure that whatever you want will come to pass. So, I'm encouraging you to act, that is, to start writing and become the author that you have always wanted to be. Let's get on with our story for the week, and we'll do that after a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back. On a clear autumn Friday night, Everett Randall streaked down the football field after catching a pass and went in for the score. Touchdown, the referee signaled, and the crowd went berserk. They were all so happy in Miles Stadium that night. Everett had just made the score that sent his team, Whitefield High, into the state championship game. Football was a big deal in this small community just outside New York City. The people there were mostly town folks who treasured the rural small town feel of the area. There were several tributaries making up the Hudson River Valley in the region, including many small ponds and lakes. Residents could see any number of ducks pedaling their way along on the smooth waters of Hudson Lake, one of several local water bodies. On the weekends, people loved to canoe and fish and maybe take a swim in the relatively clean water scattered throughout the region. This area was often described as sacred by many homegrown folks because when they compared it to the big city down the river, people really appreciated the quietness and the uneventful nature of the place. No horn blowing by angry motorists, sirens from police, or emergency vehicles going to an accident or a crime scene, and no wall-to-wall people going here and there. To the contrary, Whitefield was such a serene environment. In this area around Whitefield, waters ran deep and were ripe with fish of all kind. The scenery was something to behold, and the backdrop of the Randall Mountains marked a pleasant transition in appearance between city life further down the Hudson River and the totally rural environment that was found in and around those mountains. The massive skyline of Manhattan, the economic lifeblood of the region, was just about 20 miles downstream. Whitefield and its surroundings offered such a tranquil setting outside America's largest urban area. The community of about 90,000 prized their small-town atmosphere. The textile industry had been the main economic driving force in the area, and most of the residents of Whitefield were connected to this line of work. The residents seldom ventured into the big city. Yeah, most preferred to live away from all the hustle and bustle of the Big Apple. Events relating to the two high schools in the area were a major draw for locals. Whitefield and Newland High Schools were beacons of learning for young people as they prepared for a life away from home. But football was king during the fall season, and basketball took over during the winter. Any success for the sports teams of these schools reverberated throughout the community. Everett, who scored that winning touchdown, was highly regarded by everyone in town. After a very successful football season, Everett would turn his attention to basketball, where, again, he was the star of the team. In fact, several colleges around the country were interested in signing him up to play both football and basketball, not only because of his skilled efforts in athletic competition, but also because he was a top-notch student in the classroom. College sports programs craved this combination. He was only in the junior class at his high school with another year of eligibility remaining. Life had been good to Everett, and not coincidentally, he was a product of a strong Christian home. There was a bit of a twist to Everett's story. His father passed away when he was in elementary school. Life was made even more challenging for his mother, Sarah, because in addition to Everett, she had to raise four other small children alone after her husband passed. Everett had a younger brother along with three older sisters. Sarah also had a sister, Everett's Aunt Velma, who had three sons, all in the military and away in foreign countries doing their service. Sarah was committed to being the best single parent she could be. Her sister Velma did not make herself available to help her out with the kids. She was way down there in New York City, employed with a large advertising firm, having a prestigious upper management position in sales. Sarah never visited Velma, and Sarah herself was a librarian at Whiteville High. While they lived less than 1 hour's drive from each other, the two sisters were worlds apart in their lifestyles. In Whiteville, there was a select concentration of professional people who commuted back and forth from this small community to the big city. And they were willing to pay a good amount to someone like Sarah to care for their house and, in some cases, their children when they were away from home. When Sarah was not at work at the library, she occasionally was a nanny for some of the wealthier residents of Whiteville. She often contracted her services to oversee a household where parents might desire to attend an event in the city, but needed someone to care for their children. She was well known for providing quality care in the privacy of some of the most well-to-do households in town. During such times, when Cyril was away, Everett and his siblings would manage themselves quite well at home alone. Everett exemplified courage and a willingness to perform well in school thanks to a solid home life foundation made possible by a determined mother, even though it lacked the direction that a father would bring. It was a challenge for Sarah raising Everett and his four other siblings without a father. While she had a good job, the best she could do was to provide enough food for the kids to eat and to maintain the household in order for everyone to carry on their daily activities. On one occasion, there was an electric storm that knocked out the power for a couple of days. Sarah told her kids, "You all need to gather in the living room until the storm is over." Everyone was so frightened with all the wind and the rain and the thunder. But Everett had a genuine interest in doing well in the classroom, as he was motivated to be the best in athletic competition. He also was not as frightened of violent thunderstorms as his siblings. So, it wasn't unusual for him to make a special request of his mother. He said to her on this stormy night, "Hey, Mom, I have a big test coming up tomorrow, so I want to stay in the bedroom and study tonight." Sarah, knowing how gifted Everett was, answered her son in the positive. "Well, Everett, okay, go ahead, you can do that." Once back in his bedroom, now without his younger brother there to distract him, Everett lit a candle and gathered his papers. But before studying, he began to meditate on his real interests at the time, and that was football. He especially thought about the winning touchdown he made on that Friday night. Yes, he just sat there in a chair in front of a small desk with that candle on it, listening to the wind, rain, and thunder. Finally, after focusing on all the wind, thunder, and rain, he turned his attention to the work he needed to study to do well on the test the next day. So, he did refocus on the test he would soon have to take. It was a major test in one of Everett's science courses. Yes, he was forced to study by candlelight in that room for the whole night and into the wee wee hours of the morning. After intensive study, Everett soon became very tired and just continued sitting there in the chair, pencil and papers aside, listening to all of the wind and the rain. Eventually, Everett went to sleep. By daybreak, everything was calm following the storm the previous night. He got up and dressed, which was a challenge because he had to share the facilities with his siblings. Miraculously, the electricity had been restored. Soon, they all had breakfast together that Sarah had prepared. After that, Everett and his siblings were off to the bus stop to begin their day at school. Later that afternoon, Everett would take the test. Because of his resilience and dedication to study, he later found that he had made an A on the test, as he continued to do well academically. While Everett performed well in the classroom, he did even better in sports competition at the school. This was especially true for basketball. He made the All-Star team for the first 2 years in high school. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Any great competitor will tell you, it takes another talented athlete that you compete against to bring out the best in your talents. Josh Pickett, Everett's childhood friend, now at Newland High, the other high school in town, provided that challenge to Everett and made him a much better player than he would have been without that competition. Long before they got to high school, Josh grew up right around the corner from Everett. When they were younger, their fathers never communicated much with one another. It was a different story with their mothers, who were very close and talked with one another almost on a daily basis. They were especially close after Sarah's husband, Everett's father, died suddenly. Both Everett and Josh's competitive instinct showed early in their lives. When they were preteens, Josh and Everett often played basketball at the recreation center in the neighborhood, and the games were very competitive. They played there practically every day. While other boys were participating as well, Everett and Josh were most competitive against each other. Sometimes, just the two of them played when only they were alone in the gym. Josh, being larger and a more talented player than Everett, would win almost every game. One day, however, Everett was especially effective playing against Josh, this time in the presence of a few other guys. In fact, Everett was in the process of winning the game by a wide margin. Desperate to come back and win the game, Josh gave Everett a shove when he came toward him to score a basket.
Hey, Jenny.
It was a very hard push near Everett's head. Everett didn't take that action by Josh lightly, so he retaliated by pushing Josh back, and a struggle ensued. Everett threw a punch at Josh, but missed. Then the struggle between the two guys continued for a while.
Hey, that's enough! That's enough! Oh, it's over.
I hope someone called the police.
Eventually, the struggle ended with Everett telling Josh, "Don't push me like that. I know I don't talk much, but I can give it back to you." Josh then retorted, "Come on, because I can take anything you got."
Four.
Josh continued to taunt Everett. "I'm definitely going to come back and teach you something. Then I'm going to whip your..." But then, before Josh could finish what he was going to say, Everett retorted with the question, "Teach me? Teach me exactly what, bro?" Before Josh could answer those questions from Everett, out of the gym and went back home to cool off. Everett, meanwhile, decided to head home himself and eat the dinner that his mother had prepared. It took a while for both boys to cool off from the incident they had. After a week or so, they gradually resumed their competition playing basketball with one another. A short time after that incident, Josh's parents decided to move across town, so the two boys didn't play as much against one another after that. They ended up at different high schools and became members of their school's basketball teams. Their rivalry of playing against one another resumed, this time not in the community center, but in a much larger gymnasium at the local high schools, in front of hundreds of roaring fans. Let's take another break, and we'll return in a moment to close the show. Welcome back. Like Everett, Josh also made the All-Star team, and their teams played each other twice during each basketball season. The problem for Everett was that he never could play better than Josh when the teams met, and Josh's team would always win each year. It was a fierce competition each time they met on the court. In one game, the intensity of play was so strong that the teams got into a fight when one player pushed another. But most of the games were very civil, and usually Everett and Josh led their respective teams in points scored. What impressed Everett the most was Josh's academic performance. Josh's parents pushed him to be as successful as he could be. His father had a vision of him following in his footsteps as an attorney. Meanwhile, Josh's mother was a high school teacher at the same school where Josh attended. Everett assumed that Josh's academic performance was related to his parents' social status in the community. But the fact was that Josh had an excellent habit of study skills. He did very well academically in school. Everett and Josh grew to renew their friendship and would often talk to one another when they were not playing basketball. They would go to social events and even did a double date one time. Josh even came across town to cheer for Everett's football team and to encourage him to do better in that sport, except, of course, when they played his Newland High School team. So even though Josh did not play football, he encouraged his friend who did. Josh was a nice young man who was a product of good home training. Though fierce competitors, Everett and Josh had a good relationship, with only the fight at that community center being a stain, but even that incident faded away from both their memories. Everett's focus in the fall semester, however, was on playing football, and his fondest memory was when he streaked down the football field after catching a pass and scoring a touchdown on that Friday night. I want to close the show today by reminding you to continue your writing efforts, and especially remember that you're an author so long as you believe it in your own mind. That is to say, if you believe that at some point the story that's in your mind will eventually be captured in a printed book. In the end, you only have to implement some of the ideas put forward in these series of podcasts to bring that idea into reality in the form of a printed book. Well, so much for now. Remember, whatever you may be going through, whether good or bad, just keep in mind, there's always more. More good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.